All right, back in the Young Turks, so-called second hour. Okay. Brad Ehrlich, Ambry Allen join us here. We got some very important stories for you guys, as I alluded to earlier, including kidnappings, and then and the list goes on. What was the one that I loved later in the story? Other than, oh yeah, no, the YouTube one is really interesting. Yeah. Are they discriminating against LGBT content? Now, why in the world would YouTube do that? So that's a fascinating topic that I want to dive into a little bit later. Real quick, you know, I did the Donna Brazile story in the last segment, but I didn't give you guys enough credit. You guys are the ones that helped us hire Jordan, and then later Nomi and Michael Tracy and Ryan Grimm and Sean King and all those guys. I was about to name new people because we're about to get to 1.5 million, but I realized they weren't public. So let's get to 1.5 million. So anyway, thank you guys. And tytnetwork.com/go is what funds our journalism drive. And there we are at 1.473. So almost there. Later this week, I hope we can cross 1.5. And I've got, it's now ready. We have three names to announce to you guys. So I think it's going to be exciting. I think you guys are going to love those guys. And thank you for what you've done already, and the important stories like the Donna Brazile story that you guys broke. Real quick, three donors to that campaign: $10 from Jessica in North Carolina, $50 from Roderick in California, and $50 from Iris in Canada. We appreciate every single one of it, and we know that even if it's just $3 you're giving, that's an important $3 to you guys. So it's an important $3 to us. Thank you guys. Now let me read three quick tweets, and then we'll do all these stories. Politicat writes in about Donna Brazile. She regrets getting caught. Well, to be fair to her, don't we all?
I just snorted.
So, like, they always say that after somebody gets caught, but like, was Bill Clinton going to be like, oh, by the way, I just wanted to let you give a heads up, everybody, having sex with an intern, okay? Yeah, no, of course they regret getting caught. And the part that I don't like is the bullshit where they find Jesus. Donna didn't find Jesus. He's just like, look, man, I wish I hadn't done that. Okay, I think that's fair enough. Although I think, of course, more can be done to talk it through and figure it out as to what we do next. Anyway, Gabby Morita says, unfortunately, now that all these Trump voters, now all these Trump voters have left to eat are their words. Damn, because of the Meals on Wheels being attacked, and now they're upset because it affects them. I was kind on that lady. Well, no, I mentioned it. Anyway, I think they really thought, no, it's minorities that are getting unjustly enriched. We're only going to cut their programs. Mm-hmm. When they find out, oh no, they're cutting programs in general. Wait, that I, me, okay. And look, by the way, there's minorities who voted for Trump who are also going to be like, what, me? but anyway, but the rich, don't worry, they're going to be like, ooh, nice tax cuts. Me? Yeah, you. Anyway, Jay says, isn't the Blaze looking to cut staff? Anyway, that's such a great point. That's why I wanted to read it to you guys. So this is the same thing that ESPN went through. Like, oh my God, Bill Simmons is so controversial. We're going to have to get rid of his $5 to $10 million salary a year. Keith Olbermann, slightly controversial. I mean, he is, but not when he was at ESPN. We're going to have to part ways. And I told you at the time, they're throwing people overboard because their costs are too high. Now, by the way, I haven't bragged about this at all yet, but give me time, I'm going to do it right now. It's coming. Just read an article like 3-4 days ago, ESPN not only cutting costs, but getting rid of the high-end salaries because they can't meet costs. Because mm-hmm. people are not watching TV as much, and they're cutting their cables, so their subscription. You know that they used to have 100 million subscribers, they're now down to 88. In a post game, I can tell you more about that, inside baseball, but interesting. So the Blaze also in disastrous economic shape. So if they're paying Tommy Lahren like $25,000 a year, they might not be able to afford it.
Yeah, she's gonna ask for more.
Yeah. So, anyways, okay, that's a lot of stuff before the stories. Brett, go.
All right, let's get into it. Katy Perry says she used to pray away the gay. I'll start that over. Katy Perry said she used to pray away the gay at Bible camp. That's right, when she was accepting her Human Rights Campaign National Equality Award on Saturday, she said, quote, I kissed a girl and I liked it. Truth be told, A, I did more than that. But B,
tell me more.
How was I going to reconcile that with a gospel singing girl raised in youth groups that were pro-conversion camps? What I did know is that I was curious, and even then I knew sexuality wasn't as black and white as this dress. Ostensibly, she's wearing a black and white dress. And honestly, I haven't always gotten it right, but in 2008, when that song came out, I knew that I started a conversation that a lot of the world seemed curious enough to sing along to. She also went on to say that at her Bible camps that she went to, the word homosexuality went along with words like abomination and hell.
There you go. So I love this story because I think, one, it's right or wrong, it's more powerful when people in pop culture talk about this stuff and it affects a lot more people. So it's not just that she's kissed a girl and done more. Again, I'm not going to argue with her if she tells us more. Anyway, it's that she says, hey, these conversion camps are wrong. And calling them camps is kind of an interesting language. And say, don't do this to people. It's not the right thing, and it draws attention to something that had been accepted and shouldn't be accepted, because it's basically psychological and sometimes physical torture to try to get people to stop who they are. And you can't stop your core identity.
Yeah, it's tough. One of my favorite Daily Show, like original Daily Show era segments, was when they went and interviewed a guy who had gone to gay conversion therapy, and he said it worked. And then they walk around with him and ask him questions about his life and what he does to pray away the gay. And one thing involves just taking a tennis racket and angrily hitting his bed with it. Just start yelling, free association. And it's all this stuff. They're like, sir, this, you might think this is healthy as a way to pray away the gay, but anyone watching it would say you still need help. And the help isn't to get the gay away, it's to get away the people, get the tennis racket away from you, and get away from you the people who told you that this is how you deal with who you are as a person. Just embrace it, move forward.
So Brett, that's actually one of my favorite clips of all time.
Oh, so good.
We covered it when CNN did that. A great reporter on that story. She does all these wonderful, quirky, but smart stories. And the main thing that he would yell was, as he was hitting it with the pillow with a tennis racket, was, mom, mom, yes. Mom, why have you done this to me? Oh yeah, he's cured, right?
Yeah.
The other thing he would do, and they showed it, is that part of his therapy for others as he's converting them, is he would have the other males sit on his lap and did rock back and forth to him.
This is problematic.
Yeah.
I think it's an interesting story. It helps to change the narrative around Christianity and sexuality, because it seems as though, you know, the Mike Pencean camp of folks tend to have a monopoly on this conversation. And there are Christian folks who don't propagate the message of conversion therapy. And I think when you have someone like Katy Perry come out who has this background, who says, this is wrong, I think it's an important step. To kind of separate Christianity from this stigmatizing practice that they all don't subscribe to.
So the great point by Amber, because look, there's a lot of great stuff in Christianity, a lot of not so great stuff. And eventually through time, we've gotten rid of, through our culture, some of the stuff that isn't that palatable. Mm-hmm. So for example, divorce was 100% frowned upon, and you were hell and abomination and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And then everybody was getting divorced, so they're like, oh, let's just get rid of that, right? You're not supposed to eat shellfish, right? They're like, oh, my shrimp is delicious. And how about lobster? Are you kidding me? Let's get rid of that. So they are willing to get rid of stuff because the religion and the text doesn't matter. What matters is culture and what you actually practice. So if we can get them to get rid of the conversion camps where you're doing the psychological torture, that's great. That's great. We'll take it. Is it really hypocritical if you look at the text? Maybe. But better that they don't do it.
Yeah, it's just not that important. That part of the Bible that you're probably misquoting isn't the important part of the Bible. The important part, I mean, I went to Catholic school as like a mostly Jewish person, and it was just so confusing.
What percentage?
Just halfsies, right down. I'm exactly as Jewish as Ben Mankiewicz. Like, we're just like, you know, you're kind of in this weird limbo, and people are telling you all kinds of stuff about different religions. But like, the only parts that I found overlap in were just the parts that were like, don't be a dick.
Yeah,
be a nice person to other people. You know, there's different disagreements and strange overlap with like the characters in all three books. Like, they're all the same folks, and then they each get their own miniseries, really. But like, what you need to focus on is just be friendly. Don't be a jerk. And don't make people change who they are unless they're actually physically hurting you.
Yeah, look, even Sam Harris acknowledges the Old Testament is actually the most violent and most ridiculous out of the three books.
It's right? Great read, though.
Oh, it is. It's a fascinating read. If you read it, you will immediately become an atheist.
No.
Most of the third book is just like, this is how you don't die from your food. Right. Put it over here, take a shower, don't go to bed in your own poop.
Yeah,
that's it.
But if at the end of the day we stop reading those texts, which is preposterous for Old Testament, New Testament, Quran. This is my opinion, Amber. and you just wind up doing the Wheaton rule of don't be a dick, right? Which he does, built upon video games. But you can actually apply it to religion. Then great. Then that's a big win for the whole world. And by the way, you're technically. There's a word that Malcolm Fleshner has come up for you. You are Jew-ish.
Ish, Jew-ish, Jew enough.
By the way, I found it.
Mom, mom, mom.
That's him.
Mom, why did you do that to me?
What? That's it. That's the clip.
Oh, God, it's creepy.
That is so. What else is in your magic trove?
How did you just have that queued up?
Well, man, that soundboard ain't no joke. Okay,
that's crazy. That was not.
By the way, if you give $270 to tytnetwork.com/go to fund our journalism campaign, you not only get the cool shirt, you also get a thumb drive with everything on the soundboard.
Wow!
So you could do that at home.
That's amazing.
And in the post game, I will tell you guys why I am now have a new campaign against the word bi-curious. Because she mentioned curious a couple of times here, okay? And it is what I'm going to say is potentially controversial. So that'll be fun. That'll be for the members of the post game. So tytnetwork.com/join to become a member.
Well, I am 100% curious about what you're saying. Okay.
Fantastic.
All right. Let's move on. The police continue to search for a missing high school freshman who disappeared earlier this week. Her name is Elizabeth Thomas. She disappeared with her teacher, Tad Cummings, who's a 50-year-old. And here is the original tweet put out by the Tennessee Bureau of Investigation. She's a high school freshman. Her teacher was with her. Some additional facts. They disappeared with her on March 13th. He took $4,500 out from the bank right before this happened. He has now been put on Tennessee's most wanted list. There have been additional photos released that were found recently of him. There's a $1,000 reward if you find anything about this and his Nissan Rogue with the tags 976ZPT. You're to call 1-800-TBI-FIND. So those are some facts about what happened with them. And his wife made a statement saying, "Tad, this is not you. This is not who you are. We can help you get through this no matter how far you've gone or what is happening right now. God's grace is sufficient for you, and he wants you to come home." He was dismissed from his job at the high school on the 14th. Additionally, the father was kept in the dark by the school for a week after allegations arose that the girl was seen kissing her teacher. Those allegations weren't able to be confirmed, but teachers spoke out about their abnormal relationship. And she was suspended in school, but it was revealed later that apparently they were allowed to stay in touch during that suspension.
Yeah. So there's a couple parts of the story that I don't agree with. It's a weird thing to say, but let me explain. So when his wife says, "Tad, this is not you," agree to disagree. So it's not the Tad that you know, and I know she's going through a really rough spot here. I get it, right? And not her fault at all, the wife's fault. But people have a lot of stuff hidden away, man, and it doesn't mean that it's not them. And it's people have different personalities for their friends, their family, their wife, and apparently for this guy, for 15-year-old girls that he's teaching. Okay, so maybe it is him. And you know, they say this is not God's plan for you. Well, got a curious way of showing it. Okay, and then everybody's like, "Oh, he's armed." Yeah, he's from Tennessee. It's horrific what has happened here. But they make, I don't know. Maybe it's the reason I guess I have a slight objection to it is because it makes it seem like he took her at gunpoint, But there's a decent amount of evidence that that's not how it went down. There's allegations of kissing. Why would somebody else make that up? And then, you know, I don't know.
That was from a student, but a teacher did say that while the door was always open when they were meeting, the teacher one, as they're referred to in the report, said there should have been a better boundary between his role as a friend and a teacher. Should have stayed the teacher, implying, and not become so much of a friend to this 15-year-old girl. They said that those boundaries were breached. And that's an important thing to do. Going through high school, I knew folks, there were some inappropriate relationships between teachers and students. And it's, you know, I can't blame the student. I got to blame the teacher who's crossing these boundaries, because your job as that authority figure, in whom parents, administrators have given their trust to look after these kids, you need to respect that, and you need to be a positive influence in this person's life. No matter how romantic you think that relationship is, and no matter how much you love teaching Lolita because you identify with it, that is not your place.
Yeah, I think the way this was handled just entirely was terrible. Just the way that the school intervened, the fact that the parent wasn't notified until a week after the allegations about them kissing happened, and then him calling her a really good friend in the report, which is a red flag, right? Like, you can't be really good friends with any 16-year-old.
Right. She might have been really good at math.
Possibly. But he steps into this kind of counseling role with her, and you can't do, there's guidance counselors for those people who've been professionally trained to handle these kinds of relationships should she need that kind of intervention, which the report seems to suggest that she was going to him for some kind of counseling, or she was having some kind of emotional episode. So all of this was just poorly handled, and it's kind of a theme, just the way that schools in general, not just, you know, high schools, but also, you mentioned professor at first, but universities deal with sexual assault and deal with inappropriate relationships between students and teachers.
Yeah, I mean, at universities, you have the problem of the power dynamic that, that Brett talked about, but at least they're all adults. This is a 15-year-old.
Yeah.
You know, so like, And the father also apparently found messages between one another on their phones, on her phone, right? So this is there was something going on. But I want to be super clear about this. Just because she might not have been taken at gunpoint, and there might have been something going on, doesn't mean that anyone is responsible for it other than the teacher, the 50-year-old.
Right.
Right. No, you don't get to kidnap 15-year-olds or have them or convince them to run away with you. Mm-hmm. He did take out a whole $4,500. Loan before he did this, so I mean they're good to go for a week or two. So this is obviously poorly conceived plan and disastrous possible consequences. So finally, I do agree with the wife. Get your ass home before something much, much worse happens.
Absolutely.
There are additional stories of missing persons across the country. In Washington, D.C., over a period of less than 2 weeks, 10 Black and Latinx, that's the term for the gender neutral term for Latino or Latina, teenagers have disappeared in Washington, D.C. And it went largely unreported until the Twitter handle at Black Marvel Girl tweeted this. It takes 3.2 seconds to retweet and to help find these 8 Black girls reported missing in Washington, D.C. during the past 3.5 days. There was an additional tweet with the rest of the names. I will read them now. Currently, 2 13-year-olds, Yeshaya Enoch and Ania McNeil, 5 15-year-olds, Juliana Otero, Jacqueline Lassie, Deshaun Trakia Wallace, Diana White, and Morgan Richardson, and 1 16-year-old, Talisha Coles, are still missing. Some of the original 10 were found, and since they're minors, they're not providing information as to what happened with that disappearance. According to the Huffington Post, 37 juveniles of those reported missing since January have not been located based on a HuffPo analysis of press releases and tweets of the critically missing. All of those 37 missing are Black or Latinx. And so press releases and tweets are now issued for every missing person who falls into the critical missing category. This is the new initiative by Chanel Dickerson, the new commander of DC's Police Youth and Family Services Division. That includes persons under the age of 15, over 65 with a medical condition that could put them in harm's way, or where there's an indication of foul play. Now, this is an important move because until now, since such a large percentage of those who disappear end up being runaways, they said that they've kind of been getting lazy and just saying every person who disappears from this neighborhood is probably a runaway. But now that is the new protocol for reporting missing persons. And there's going to be a new Twitter handle from that department to do that.
So some prominent African Americans in social media are concerned that on a day like today, where the possible kidnapping of Elizabeth Thomas, the 15-year-old white girl from Tennessee, gets so much press coverage, and we covered it as well, that it's disproportionate, and that not only are black girls not getting enough help in literally being found as much as the more highly publicized cases like Elizabeth Thomas, but that there might be some assumptions as to that goes into that coverage. Well, I mean, they could say it's a bad neighborhood, and hence they're more likely to run away from issues that come up in that neighborhood. Well, by the way, sometimes that is true, right? And sometimes that's your assumption. Some of the girls are as young as 8. There was a big case in 2014 with an 8-year-old, right? Some of the names that Brett just read to you are as young as 13. So I think that this is probably a very unfair assumption for a lot of the African American girls that are missing that also could use the help that further attention gives. And second of all, I mean, if you had Elizabeth Thomas' situation where she was said to have been kissing the teacher before they left together in some way, by some of the students, and she was said to have, and her father says they exchanged messages on the phone. He says they were, the teacher, 50-year-old teacher, says they were friends. Now, does that excuse any of the things that the teacher did? Absolutely not. Does that make the situation for Elizabeth Thomas any better? Absolutely not. Mm-hmm. But remember, if that was an African American girl from a poor neighborhood, and they said, well, she did kiss that guy, and she was exchanging messages with him, are you positive that they wouldn't just say, well, that's a runaway, they ran away together, it's not really a missing person, let's not make a big deal out of it?
Yeah, I think this goes to the notion of which victims are framed as victims and which, you know, groups of people are framed as culpable in terms of why they're missing. Are they missing? Are they missing, or did they make this choice? And I think even framing things as, or framing folks as runaways, running away from what, right? What kind of social conditions are they running away from that still might require some kind of police intervention, mm-hmm. right? So that doesn't, you know, absolve you from having to do your job because what you think might have possibly happened, that's not how you police, right? Yeah. That's not how you, you know, yeah. do
so
your
that's
job.
Such a great point. Can I just say, Amber, I never thought of that. Like, so you're right. Like, of course it's bad either way, but like, my God, if the 13-year-old actually ran away, hurry up, find her, because the younger you are and the more susceptible you are to an older person getting you involved in things like the yeah. you know, sex trafficking, etc. So it's not like, well, I mean, she ran away, so I guess let's just let her get trapped by an older guy into doing terrible things.
Sure.
No, go find her. Let alone the people who are actually missing because someone kidnapped them.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. There needs to be some kind of social work that's done after that, just to make sure that these people who are in, you know, no matter if it's Elizabeth Thomas or, you know, Ania McNeil, there is something that's done afterwards when you find these folks.
Yeah, and I'm going to reiterate, doesn't mean you should do less in finding Elizabeth Thomas, for God's sake, find right. her. Okay, but you should also do as much to find all these girls. And by the way, it's a stunning fact in this article that it's almost unbelievable. They said 40% of confirmed sex trafficking victims, mm-hmm. who are of course overwhelmingly female, are black. 40% are black, and according to a 2013 report from the Justice Department, okay, and 56% of the confirmed labor trafficking victims are Latina.
Yeah.
What? So that's 96% black yeah. and Latina. So when people in those groups say, "Hey, you might want to pay attention here because our groups are getting victimized at a much larger rate. And right. boy, that is a giant issue. It's not just complaining, it's saying, hey, can we get help? Because obviously this affects us disproportionately, mm-hmm. and we require that assistance from the whole society so that our kids are not captured and then put into these into the sex trade.
Absolutely.
As decent human beings, you might want to heed that call for help.
All right, we turn to another story that happened in California. Some diners at a restaurant encountered a peculiar flavor of service recently. This is the Facebook post that emerged after an incident at a restaurant in Huntington Beach, where two diners, a few friends and I went to St. Mark's in Huntington Beach today. Here's an excerpt from it. As soon as I sat down, according to Diana Carrillo, as soon as I sat down, the waiter approached the table and without welcoming us, asked me for my proof of residency. The waiter then asked her and her friends, according to the story, and sister the same thing, adding, I have to make sure you're from here before I serve you. These are Latina women. And so first of all, just let's stop there. That's amazing. Like just the logic in that question is in that motion is insane to me.
I just did a Google search of St. Mark's, 3.3 stars. Okay? So you don't get to ask for any kind of identification until you get your reviews up. And it's still inappropriate. Maybe start with the mediocre service and food.
Right. What if they're like, I need to make sure you're from here because people who are from here rate this place so poorly.
Is that what it is?
I hope you're from someplace else. I'm from a place with a lower standard for culinary experiences.
So you guys are rightfully criticizing. But you know, I'm going to do something slightly weird. Maybe it's because I'm a business owner. I kind of feel bad for the owner, and I'll tell you why.
Sure.
The story is true. He found out, and he fired the guy immediately. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I didn't tell him to do that. I don't know what this crazy guy who I hired randomly hates Latinos and is going to ask him these crazy questions.
Yeah.
Right? So give St. Mark's a chance. No, I don't know.
I'm withholding judgment.
There's a fair point about the reviews. Okay, and by the way, I don't know if the reviews went down after this incident.
It's possible, right? Yeah, I've got to do a comparative.
I don't know the dude. Don't get me wrong. Right. There's no bias here, right?
Yeah, the food is great. Let me put it out there. Service,
You might be removed if you're in the wrong race, but
bring your appetite and your papers.
So now, look, the seriousness of this is there's two things going on here. One is I really believe it's true that the Trump era has given a license to bigots to come out of the closet, to come out of the racist closet. And say, I'm flying my flag proudly here. Okay, you look kind of,
Literally at rallies, people, in motorcades with Confederate flags.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so I think that in the old days, they would have been embarrassed to do this and would have thought, well, I might get fired. Well, it turns out you're still going to get fired, right? But they feel like empowered. Like, well, the president says things like that. He says the people coming in are criminals and rapists. What, I can't ask these people for their papers? I mean, look at them. They look slightly brown.
Yeah.
Right? But the second thing is, I don't want you to, they came out of the closet a little bit more, no question. But I don't want you to think that it this is a new phenomenon.
Right.
And so if you're not from LA, you might be really surprised because the LA area is considered generally very liberal, right? But no, there are beach towns.
Absolutely.
In LA that have a reputation for not allowing minorities in. So now it might not be as brazen as this, but you go to a nightclub in an area like this and you're black, good luck getting in. So that is a story that is often told by African Americans in LA.
Yeah. So. I live in the South Bay and I refer to it as like, it just seems like Hitler won down there. Like, it's a lot of really Aryan athletic people on the beach just having the best time.
Yeah. And look, it's. Are they Nazis? No.
Okay. No.
Yeah, I know.
Good luck finding a deli, but that's beside the point.
But it is also not an accident that when you go out to a club in that area of LA, it looks incredibly white. Because,
oh my gosh, yeah.
Because every African American, not every, but almost every African American that I've run into, at least in LA, can tell you a story about being excluded from those clubs for having the wrong clothes.
Yeah.
Right? That the guy right before you had the same exact clothes.
Yeah.
But a little slightly different skin tone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I went to school in these areas and I made it out, guys. But yeah, this is real, and I think this is definitely overt, and we've seen other kind of outward displays of racism in different other professions, and people are getting fired. So I don't know that other folks are getting the message about their racist displays, but it will get you fired. This reminds me of that black veteran who was asked to show some kind of proof of identification at Chili's, right? Like, just, you know, like, I'm not going to give you this free cheesy skillet, you know, unless you prove to me that you are. Essentially, it's like you're not American. I don't believe you were a soldier. And I think it's, again, these schemas for like who fits in and who's, you know, and it's all race.
So Jesse Jackson told this powerful story that even back when I was a Republican affected me. He told a story about how his father served in World War II. And then they had done a great job. They captured a bunch of Nazis, and then they were all going on a train together. And the black soldiers had to sit behind the Nazis, because the Nazis were white and the black American soldiers were black. So they were still inferior to the effing Nazis in the minds of the people who enforce that segregation. So that is devastating. So it's not a new phenomenon.
Sure.
At the same time, it was a little bit better when they hid in the closet.
Yeah.
So they're coming out like.
Yeah, we gotta shame them. We have to shame, you know.
Shame.
There's been an unshaming of white supremacy since Trump has taken office, and we have to reshame all of you.
That's right, and I've got a sound for that too.
Shame, shame, shame.
There's the bell.
That's exactly what the owner said right before he fired the guy.
Yeah, they also offered them, this is great, management contacted the women on Monday offering them a VIP experience at the restaurant and pledging to donate 10% of the weekend's proceeds to a nonprofit organization. So that's nice. I get the owners like, listen, I just opened
a
restaurant.
What can you do?
Yeah. But like, I love the VIP experience. It'll be so important, no one will ask for proof of residency. That's how important a person you'll feel like.
Yeah, that immediately made me think, wait, there's a VIP experience at these restaurants?
Yeah.
I didn't realize that happened.
Who's been getting it is the question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can I try the VIP experience?
Amazing.
They're like extra butter with your toast.
All right, let's do that YouTube story.
Okay, hold.
Unless you want to take a hold.
Yes, so let's take a quick break. I know we're past the hour already, but we do have more stories for you guys. Let's take a quick break and we'll come right back and tell you the YouTube one. Are they doing discrimination? That is interesting and bizarre. We'll tell you all about it when we return. All right, back on the Young Turks. Let me quickly read some tweets for you guys because they're really good. Mallory said, had a similar experience to Katy Perry. It's possible for people to become educated. They unfortunately choose to be ignorant. A lot of folks do, but Mallory, Katy Perry obviously got past that. Look, I got a whole theory on how the internet's going to cure religion. We'll touch on it in the post game. I also want to get into Latinx in the post game. Like, is that a good, like, I'm kind of against that word, I've decided. So that might also be controversial. A lot of controversy.
I am bi-curious.
Yes.
Okay.
So tytnetwork.com/join to hear all my outrageous opinions. Dem Gusted says, being angry at mom for making you gay also plays into the right-wing misogyny. Very true. That's such a great point.
Jeez,
I can do a half an hour on that. I love this. Jake Johnson says, hashtag TYT Live is trending for me. I live in freaking Louisiana. So now that's the thing about Twitter, is that if it's trending for you, it doesn't mean it's trending for everybody. But it means that it's trending for a lot of folks in your region. So hashtag TYT Live, trending in Louisiana right now, apparently. So that's how you communicate to us throughout the show, hashtag TYT Live. And by all means, man, do it. Soon it'll be trending nationally, hopefully every live show we do. Okay, and then the final thank yous. This is for the Journalism Drive, $50 from Rick in Oklahoma, $127 from Ryan in Australia, $127 from Jonathan in Oregon. So that's, of course, tytnetwork.com/go. I'll take one last quick look at it. And then the members of the day are Samuel Phillips and Dalton Crosthwaite. So,
good name.
That's a nice name. Okay, Dalton Crosthwaite. Okay, Dalton and Samuel, you guys rock the world, and there we are at 1.473. Keep it going, guys. And like I said, for the members, hell of a post game. where I'm going to question if bicurious is a thing and if Latinx is a thing.
Yeah.
TYTnetwork.com/join. Okay, forward.
Is YouTube censoring LGBTQ videos and vloggers and YouTubers in general? That's the big question right now circulating among YouTubers after it was, it seems like it was all brought up by Rowan Ellis, a YouTuber who noticed some trends. Now, this isn't hers, but let's take a look at two YouTube feeds. One has the a filter on it, the restricted filter, and one doesn't. If you see on the left, this is from Neon Fiona. On the left is the raw feed, on the right is the filter feed, and you'll see what's missing. The top one on the left is my YouTuber lesbian crushes, which when you turn on a filter called the restricted filter by YouTube, that disappears, as does one called gay girl interviews, straight guy. So that's what we're seeing. And she says, just looked at my videos with the restricted mode on, seeing a bit of a theme here, LGBT plus content not safe for kids. Now, a lot of folks kicked up some dust about this to try to get YouTube's attention, and it took a minute, but YouTube did respond. They issued this statement on their YouTube handle, on their Twitter handle. They said this: we are so proud to represent LGBTQ plus voices on our platform. They are a key part of what YouTube is all about. And there are a ton of LGBTQ plus YouTubers. The intention of restricted mode is to filter out mature content for the tiny subset of users who want a more limited experience. LGBTQ plus videos are available in restricted mode, but videos that discuss more sensitive issues may not be. We regret any confusion this has caused and are looking into your concerns. We appreciate your feedback and passion for making YouTube such an inclusive, diverse, and vibrant community. So from what I've gathered, it seems like when they say a small subset of people who want a more limited experience, a lot of folks are calling out that this is like in a library when you go to do some research and you know you don't know who's coming in to use the library, you put a more filtered experience on, as in also like a hotel lobby, or if you have kids and you don't want to expose them to what you hope are you know, controversial topics, you put this filter on. And it's just another check where your kids aren't watching things that you would consider to be controversial or that they're not ready for yet. But it's not just YouTubers that have seen the brunt of this. Tegan and Sarah, a music group, if you're not familiar, go check out their tunes, said if you put YouTube on restricted mode, a bunch of our music videos disappear. I checked myself. LGBTQ people shouldn't be restricted. And then a very Trumpian, hilarious, sad. there's a question here, though. The big issue brought up by Callum McSwiggin, as described by Mashable, is he specifically notes a video in which he talks about coming out to his grandmother and says, how on earth is that not suitable for children? If anything, it would be extremely beneficial and helpful for children to see that, especially children who are struggling to deal with their identity, especially to LGBT plus kids. There's a lot to discuss. It's very complicated. But what are your first thoughts?
So there's usually two reasons why things will get blocked on any kind of social media like YouTube. And the primary one is advertising. So advertisers don't want nudity, so all the Free the Nip campaigns are not going to work because advertisers don't want it. And that's the overwhelming. And I thought in the beginning maybe this was what this was about, but this is slightly different. This is, hey, I have chosen this restricted mode, so I want to make sure that it is safe and family friendly. Now, then that gets into Callum's point. Well, what do you mean? Like, I think this is very family friendly, and I think it's actually very helpful to kids if they're dealing with these issues to see stuff like this. Tyler Oakley, one of his videos that got restricted was 8 black LGBTQ plus trailblazers who inspire me. So, and then I thought in the beginning, again, when I read the headline, I was like, wait, is this like, we did a fun story about this like 10 years ago in the Arturs, that's how old we are, about like there's all these like lesbian kissing videos on YouTube. You can't show nudity, but they'll get almost all the way there, and there'll be a lot of Japanese girls who have found each other very attractive apparently, and they will like kiss around their face and like with the, I mean, it's
God bless them.
Yeah, God bless. Okay, now if you put that in under restricted mode, you're not allowed to see the Japanese face licking, lesbian face licking. Okay, I get it. maybe that you consider that not family friendly. But if you're having a serious conversation about people who inspire you or your how you came out to your grandmother, that doesn't sound right.
Right.
Restrict that.
And it seems like there's holes in the technology. So it's not even accomplishing the things that YouTube set out to accomplish, aside from whether those goals had any merit. Mm-hmm. So there are things like if you, there's somebody posted, and I didn't make the graphic for this, sorry, but it's just like they turned on restricted mode and found like 50, or no, it literally says 16.2 million results, but I'm sure they don't all apply, where like the title has the F word in it. So you can't have the touching coming out story of courage or of just people who inspire artists who happen to be gay.
Right.
But you can see like, you know, duck song, fuck. Like you can watch that. Good. Like that's a question.
You need to create a new logarithm or something that doesn't categorically exclude. I don't know how they're lumping. Is it keywords? Like what's what, you know, how are they contributing to these to this restricted mode, because it's not even-handedly even excluding material that may be problematic for children.
Yeah, so right now they're having serious discussions about with their engineers, like,
I don't want this. I think it's a difficult challenge. I don't know, I took a few computer programming classes in college, and I you kind of see how you break it down, but it would be very difficult to accurately identify these things. And I know there have been a lot of initiatives from well-meaning tech companies that have been utterly bungled at the beginning, but part of their culture is try stuff, if it fails, fix it. And hopefully over at YouTube, they identify that this is the kind of thing that seems to be failing, at least in searching F-bombs. We need to fix it. But the question is, like, there are issues with the gay character in Beauty and the Beast. And I talked to some people who are extremely progressive, and they're like, listen, there comes a point at which I want to start the conversation with my kids. I don't want them to find it on YouTube first. Mm. I tend to come down on the side of like, it's okay to tell kids that folks are gay. They probably won't notice anyway.
Yeah. Look, if you don't treat it as something like really weird, they just grow up thinking, okay, that's life. Some people are this way, some people are that way.
It's like when kids fall and they scrape their knees. If the parents are like, oh my God, are you okay? Then the kid's gonna start wailing and crying. But I have some friends who are like, pop up, pop up. And the kids think it's a great game when they fall. They pop right up and everybody claps and they're happy.
Yeah, you spit on it, okay? And if you're a real man, you get beyond that problem. Okay, no, maybe not the right way to parent. Okay, so well, there's one other thing though that we have to discuss if we're keeping it real in this regard. It might be a little political. So here's what I mean by that. Right wingers don't agree. And we live in a big country and there are right wingers. And I'm not dismissing that. Mm-hmm. I'm actually saying, okay, let's have a conversation about it. They might say, hey, look, you might think it's perfectly normal to have the Johnny has two dads or whatever, and you're comfortable teaching that to your kid, you lib and out in LA. But I'm not comfortable and I want it to be family friendly and in my in my library, community library here in the Ozarks. Are there still libraries?
Yes, there are.
Yes, and so I don't want the touching coming out story that's touching to you is not touching to me. I think it's, you know, harming my kids. How do you resolve that? That's a really interesting question.
I think the distinguishing factor is this isn't a, Facebook, it has the thing where you can kind of like a sound mixing board turn up certain filters and down other filters. Mm-hmm. This isn't an action where you can say, gay stuff, I don't want it on my kids' thing. You're not opting out of gay, you're opting out of controversial and restricted, which implies that that thing you're opting out of is bad, and under that penumbra is gay stuff. So it really is implying that gay stuff should be restricted because in a way it's bad. I think they should maybe, for parents, divide it up into the things you feel comfortable, you know, category-wise for your kids to see. Because if, you know, I love it when I see bullying stopped on YouTube. I love it when like really shitty YouTubers get called out for being jerks. And I like that. And that's the kind of instinct we should foster. And a lot of times the way they're called out is by these very brave, strong LGBTQ vloggers who are saying, stop it. This was my experience. And you might not be gay, but you should know not to pick on me because I am. And I think that's valuable.
So let me add one more thing to what Brett's saying, because it's really important. Because making that decision to exclude the LGBT content is also an act of commission, not omission. right? So you're still actively making a decision. And you're not saying I'm neutral to the right and the left. Some say, you know, you should have it for your family, and others say your family shouldn't look at it. When you exclude it, you have said the right wing is correct. It should be excluded from family-friendly content because being gay has some intrinsic problem with it, and we understand why you would want it excluded. So I would urge you to not make that decision leaning on that side.
Right.
So I'm not saying that it's an easy decision to make because we're a big country and we all disagree on a lot of different things. And you want to exclude certain things from YouTube Kids, I hear you, brother, and that's a different conversation. You want to exclude it from because of advertising issues, even though a lot of our stuff gets blocked, I hear you, that's an economic decision. Mm-hmm. But in this case, you're making a value decision on content.
Sure. Yep.
And I'd urge you to reconsider that decision.
It just doesn't need to be binary, I think. Anyways, oh, sorry. Okay, let's do this. Next one, we're running out of time. Does the Pope support exorcisms? I don't know. I love the Pope. You never know what this Pope's going to do next.
Yes.
And that next thing that he did was kind of make some statements about exorcism. Now, for the longest time, exorcism was something that was totally fine to do. And then in 1999, there was a new rule under which the Vatican urged priests to say, like, if someone comes to you and they seem to be having a mental problem, it's possible that it's not the devil. It's possible it might be a mental illness issue, in which case, show them to a doctor. And the Pope, who is the highest ranking official in the Vatican and the Catholic Church, sets these kind of agenda items and tones. And he says that the devil's in the details. You know what I mean? That's the only joke I came up with ahead of time today.
It's terrible. Does the show.
Yeah, no, just signposts. All right, the devil's in the details. He says discernment is necessary also because those who approach the confessional may come from the most desperate situations. When the confessor becomes aware of the presence of genuine spiritual disturbances that may be in large part psychic, and therefore must be confirmed by means of healthy collaboration with the human sciences, he must not hesitate to refer the issue to those who in the diocese are charged with this delicate and necessary ministry, namely doctors, just kidding, exorcists.
So here's my interpretation of that. That's the Pope saying, like, come on, I don't really believe this. But it's still a powerful force in the church, and I can't uproot everything at once and tell you that exorcism is a load of crap. Come on, though. First, confer with a real doctor. I like your reading of it, of the human scientists.
Yeah. It's human sciences, it's so good.
Yes.
The ones people did.
Right.
Not the religious sciences.
And then confer with the non-human scientists called exorcists. So he's trying to get you to lean in that direction and trying to strike the right balance without stepping on too many Catholic toes. Mm-hmm. But it's still funny to see the framing, right? He says, you should do the exorcism only if absolutely necessary.
Mm-hmm.
What is an exorcism really absolutely necessary? And he says, and if there's real spiritual disorders, as opposed to the fake spiritual disorders, well, I see Trump tweeting about all the time, fake spiritual disorder.
Sad. Oh, I love this.
I think he's trying to make a distinction between spiritual disorders and mental illness.
Right.
Right.
Yes.
And I think this is obviously the purview of the church, right? But I think there are people who like commune and dabble in the occult, and you know, you should probably see your local religious expert pending their training, seminars for potential exorcists for help. Because I think that, I mean, I'm not a medical professional, and I think he is saying seek medical intervention. But I think there are folks who do and dabble with spiritual stuff who, you know, you need to see some religious folks.
I believe.
I don't agree, by the way, but so yes.
I saw the movie The Exorcist.
You're an expert.
So I'm an expert, okay. And I'm not a doctor, but I did watch Grey's Anatomy seasons, like first five, I want to say. Pretty religiously, ironically.
Yeah, grade A analyst here. Go ahead, Brett Ehrlich on our exorcism A team.
So before I give my thoughts, let me undercut my credibility 1,000%. But I do. There's a placebo effect where it's like some people believe, If you believe you're cured, and this is a very small amount of people who have mental illnesses, and or people who present to have mental illnesses, I think that there are some folks, or there may be some folks for whom a over dramatized event with an authoritative figure like an exorcist there presents like this rite of passage that they can go through, a tangible experience that everyone believes in and lends credence to whatever's wrong with them, regardless if it's described as like a crazy demon possession. But they can go through this experience and come out the other side the same way you can take a sugar pill and just believe you're cured and then be cured. Yeah. It's the magic feather.
Yeah, I saw my grandpa do some Muslim voodoo prayer reading, just like exorcism, not just like exorcism, nowhere near it, but it was a simpler form. And in Islam, you're supposed to whisper over there or blow, they like do this. Now, even as a 16-year-old, I was like, this is totally bullshit. Okay, and then the lady felt like she was really cured of her back pain. She did. She was walking around. And it's the placebo effect. There's no. I know my grandfather. He doesn't believe it. Okay, he was just going. Right, and it worked. It worked, and it, without any real intent or anything behind it. So, look. So, Amber, you sound a little bit more spiritual or religious than I am, which is not a hard thing to do.
Yeah, I'm not tipping the scales here.
Right,
but
but look, to me, so I'm going to be much harsher than you or you, Brad. There is no. You should never do an exorcism. It's not a real thing. Okay, there's no. Like maybe spiritual disorder. No, you're sick. You should go to a psychiatrist or get some real help. Always tell the story of Bobby Jindal, former governor of Louisiana, who when he was in college, I think at like Dartmouth or something like that, they kidnapped this poor girl and did an involuntary exorcism on her. Oh my God, you're a lunatic. Don't do that. Don't do that. So I'm sorry, but demons don't exist and they don't possess you. And you can't get them out by going, blah, 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 if you're Muslim or Catholic or anything else. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I am not subscribing to exorcisms or exorcists or these trained professionals, which I did not know existed until this article. And I think mental illnesses are real. I think that the folks we see on the Bible, you know, the crazy Bible channels where they're tapping people with oil and they're passing out, I think all of that is ridiculous. But I do think there are certain instances where people believe or experience spirits or experience emotions as spirits, right? So depression or what have you. And I think if you want to go to your religious leader for prayer, then I think that that makes sense. Exorcism seems extreme, but I do think ultimately, if you have a responsible religious leader, he's going to tell you to go seek some medical help.
Yeah. So look, I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
It's like Reza Aslan says, he says, Islam is the vessel for my spirituality. I don't have to believe every word of it for me to say, that's how I express my spirituality. Mm-hmm. And that you're saying that Christians obviously feel that way in other ways. And I will say the same thing I said to Reza. I don't believe that. I think, okay, I hear you, brother, but I don't agree. The one thing we can all agree on is that it is amusing that there are professional exorcists.
Love it.
And I like the way they're like, get a load of these amateur exorcists.
Right, is there like a D right. League, like a development league?
Yeah, yeah.
Like triple a certificate?
The amateur exorcist. Yeah,
exactly. What do you get, a robe?
Yeah.
Graduation, exorcism, are there exorcism boards you have to take?
Maybe.
What do I have to do to get one of our reporters
to
exorcism graduation?
Just ask.
Maybe that's it, that's right. And then I like the way they dismissed the other guys. Those amateurs, quacks. They're not even doing exorcism right.
So good.
Anyway, okay, guys, we got to go. Fun post game for you guys with my controversial, un-PC, non-liberal positions on Bicurious and Latinx. TYTnetwork.com/join so that you can join up and then decide you don't like me. Okay. Bye-bye.
I always mess it up.